Welcome to the OA Serenity Sunday Meeting Podcast. Serenity Sunday is now hybrid, meeting in person at Roxbury Park in Beverly Hills and on Zoom. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup's webpage at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live in either iteration. Now that we're meeting in person, Serenity Sunday has regular meeting expenses and would appreciate Seventh Tradition donations to help support the meeting and this podcast. You can donate via Venmo at Serenity Sunday 2023 or through PayPal, serenitysunday1212@gmail.com. The opinions expressed on the Serenity Sunday podcast are those of the individual speaker and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. And now, our speaker.
My name is Rod. I am a grateful recovering compulsive overeater.
Hi, Rod.
And this is home for me. I was Eskimoed, as they say, which means brought in by a friend of mine on the 23rd of January, 1990. And it was that's a Friday night. We had just played a game of pitch and putt golf at Rancho Park, which is not too far from here. And this particular meeting was at the West Side Pavilion. And Friday nights was a big OA meeting night. There were at least 50 people in this meeting. And then up at Cedars-Sinai, there was another meeting going on at the same time where there were at least 100 people. And they, at that meeting, they had two speakers. The first thing that I noticed that for me was an attraction was the honesty in the room. When people talked, there was no pretense. I had been involved a little bit with religion, and in my opinion, there was some pretense pressure there, and there was none here in OA. And there was nobody sitting near the door with a cash register either. It was a dollar at that time was the common denominator of contributions to the Seventh Tradition. And it was 2 weeks later, on February the 7th, which was a Tuesday night, that I attended a meeting in the Marina del Rey. And after the meeting, I asked a fellow, tell me more about abstinence, please. And he said, well, what are you drawn to? Some people go back and forth between salt and sweet. Some people go just for fatty foods. Some people are, you know, they focus on sweets. And I thought about it. I didn't quite hear that, but that's okay. So I thought about it, and I thought, well, you know, I do at least a pint of ice cream every night as kind of a reward. I thought sugar for me mostly. And so I went home that night and avoided having sweets. And I woke up the next morning refreshed. I had slept better because there was no liquid in my system that might wake me up for a journey to, you know, the WC. And so I kept coming back. And I learned about the steps and more about my fellows, and I was the only one in my family who ate. My dad was wiry, and he encouraged me to eat, actually. My mother was just steady on. She maintained her weight at her high school level. It moved, of course, but she, no problem. My one sister never gained weight, and it was me. And I actually was pudgy in grammar school and in junior high somewhat, but I was pretty active. And then in high school, I lost most of my weight and went into the army. And I was actually lucky to be in a really interesting arm branch. I was in military intelligence. I know. That's an oxymoron, right? Military intelligence. Anyways, I wasn't aware of that description at the time, but what I found, and I kept my weight off, what I found was that I turned to food and alcohol and pot to escape feelings inside me. And excuse me. And I also used exercise to some degree to keep the weight off me, but I wasn't an exercise bulimic by any definition. As I got older, it became more difficult to keep the weight off. However, the other addictions, if you will, that I had, I sort of juggled them, the food, the pot, the booze. I gave them away slowly. In November of '83, I stopped drinking. I didn't go to a program. I was aided in stopping by the Santa Monica Police Department, I would say, who pulled me over for the very first time. And it was so humiliating. I mean, excuse me, that I never picked up. And I was really, I knew I had a problem with alcohol. I welcomed the fact that something had helped me, I beat the case, actually. Because I wasn't focused on a moral inventory. I told a lie, and the policeman who arrested me didn't show up. Fate, the judge said, well, we'll have to send him a special delivery mail postage, I should say letter. He didn't show up then either. So the case was dropped for lack of sufficient evidence. Thank you very much. Okay, so what happened when I came into program? This is a process that we can use all of our lives. And it awareness, in my belief, comes to us in phases. We're asked to surrender this to a higher power. Well, my relationship with my higher power has ebbed and flowed. At first, I had lived in a foreign country as a, first in the military and then as a civilian. And I thought, you know, the religion I grew up with sort of said, if you don't believe this, you're out of the running for what happens later. And I thought every one of the people that I knew in that foreign country, you know, they didn't subscribe to this particular religion that I was brought up in. And I thought, how could that be? How could a higher power think that way? Or sort of demand that way? So I ebbed and flowed to, I looked at what they call deism as opposed to theism. Theism is the study of religion. Deism talks about a God who created the universe, okay, but who just watches us. The deistic God doesn't reward or punish. And I thought, well, you know, I got it. So anyways, all of that kind of ebbed and flowed for me. And taking, you know, we're asked to take a moral inventory of ourselves, not a moral inventory of the other guy. And that's because we are cleaning up our wreckage, if you will, from the past. We have to come to terms with it, and we may come to terms with it not all at once, but slowly over time. So a reflective process is really helpful. The first time I went through the 12 steps, it was with a woman in the valley called Maxine. I don't know if Maxine is with us anymore, but she's not, huh? Okay. She would take groups through the steps in 2 weekends. So we came the first week, a lot of big book referencing, teaching, and so on. And then we went home and we took the fourth step moral inventory of ourselves. And when we came back the next Sunday, we shared that as the fifth step asks us to do. I wasn't in a good space at that time. And I was asked to share my inventory with a woman. And the take that I had on it was, see if you can beat this, you know. I tried to sort of shock her a little bit as opposed to humbly offering it. Now, I didn't do anything in my life that was really shocking. Out of character, maybe, but not shocking. And then we're supposed to move on. Well, the moving on in the 12-step process can't be finished in the rest of the day on that Sunday. It's an ongoing process for us where we take a look at those character defects that we have. One of my larger defects was self-centeredness. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean selfish. It just means, like, why can't I understand someone else's point of view and accept it, you know? That's the part of self-centeredness that I have to deal with. Making amends. I have had very few amends to make in my life, gratefully. The ones that I really focused on were those with people that were very important to me, whether rather than with the grocer where I had had a little snack out of the salad bar, you know. So I then the ninth step asks us to make amends to those people. Well, in the case of my family, my dad had passed. I wouldn't owe him amends anyways. We had a wonderful relationship. But with my mom, I did owe her amends. Well, how to do it? It's supposed to be something that we do with meaning, not just toss out, I'm sorry. There's a thing in program that we call living amends, which means we change our behavior towards them. If we've been self-centered, we slow down and ask ourselves to be more thoughtful before we open our mouths. That's what I did. And I heard it from you in these rooms. I heard about people restoring their important family relationships, and that was really meaningful. And the way that they had done it, by focusing on a gratitude list, not just behaving differently, but trying to realign focus on moving through life. And then the 10th step asks us to take a daily moral inventory of ourselves to make sure that we aren't back on that other track, that pre-programmed track where our character defects came out. And so we make amends to people quickly if at the end of the day we see that we've stepped on somebody's toes. Now, interestingly enough, this really surprised me. The ancient Egyptians, right? 5,000 years ago, communicated in hieroglyphics primarily. When they found the Rosetta Stone, which showed hieroglyphics, Greek and ancient Greek on it in the town of Rosetta, they were able to learn to translate the hieroglyphics. And there's something called that they called the Book of the Dead. And in the Book of the Dead, it says that in order to pass on to, I'll say, heaven, the next level, that they show a scale in this hieroglyphic image, a balance scale like this. And the way it works, this is metaphoric, but on one side of the scale is the individual's heart. On the other side of the scale is a bird's feather. And if your heart
That's
weighs more
your
than the
18
feather,
minutes, just so you know. 2 minutes
kudos
left,
to you.
sorry.
Okay, now this is a metaphoric comparison. Obviously, any organ from the body is going to weigh more than a feather. The idea is a light heart. They have been looking for the people with light hearts. Now, they defined heaven much differently than we do, but I won't talk about that. The principle that they were after there, the lightheartedness, is what we can find in this program. We are given the steps, we are given support from our fellows to make sure that we move forward in life with a light heart. Okay? Wow, I thought when I learned that. And by the way, for a few more days, maybe two or three, at the Getty Malibu, Getty Museum, Malibu, they have an exhibition on the Book of the Dead there. And they talk all about this. So, if you're interested and have the time, it's going to leave shortly. But so, what about body size? I didn't say it, but I've given away about 8 inches from around my waist. Now, am I at what might be called fighting weight? I could still give away more weight. Am I at a healthy body weight? Pretty much. Okay. I'm very comfortable with my body at this weight. By the way, the abstinence that I have chosen has varied over the years, and it has not been perfect.
That's your time.
And I'll describe why it hasn't been perfect. And I heard this real early on in program. If an airplane is flying from Los Angeles to New York or DC or something like that, if it gets off course, does it turn around and go back to Los Angeles and start all over again? No, it corrects course. And I've been lucky enough to correct course. Or, for other people, it's they perhaps have left program for a while and they decide to return. So, again, this is a process. It's, as they say, physical, mental, and emotional. No.
Rob, that's your time.
Physical, emotional, and spiritual. Thank you very much.